immigration policy is the talk of the nation these days. The president this week announced his plan for reform, and a bipartisan gang of eight senators has offered their own plan that's not so different. For the first time in years, it looks like the partisan gridlock on whether and how to provide a citizenship path for the 11 million or so undocumented immigrants in the country may be broken soon. We know that matters in border states. It certainly matters to politicians these days, but does it matter to you? Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today, immigration and the Kansas City area, potential changes to the law that may have more of an impact on local businesses and on your neighbors than you think. Our guests today are Jessica Piedra. She's president of the Latino Coalition of Kansas City. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you.
Carlos Gomez is president and CEO of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to you, Carlos.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Roger McCrumman is with us. He's a lawyer at McCrumman Immigration Law Group. Welcome.
Thanks.
In a bit, we'll talk with a student who would have benefited from the DREAM Act proposed last year and who now waits to see what the impact of these new proposals will be. We also want to hear from you. How do immigration issues affect you personally? Email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or comment on KCUR's Facebook page. Let me ask you, Jessica and Carlos, are there estimates of how many illegal or undocumented immigrants there are in the Kansas City area?
Well, it's hard to count, obviously, that this population, but we imagine that based on national percentages and the percentages of immigrants in the Missouri area, that it's about less than 1% of the population in Missouri specifically. I have those statistics that that are undocumented. But we do also know that many of those families are over 80% are mixed immigration families, where some of the family members are undocumented and some of them are citizens or permanent residents. My own family fits that category, and it's so that's something that most folks don't necessarily understand.
And less than 1% would still represent thousands of people in the Kansas City area, right?
That's correct. And 80% of someone who's undocumented will go home to a legal resident or an American citizen. So when we're talking about the immigration law, it affects Americans every day.
Typically, Roger McCrumman, how did residents who are here without papers, without visas, come here? Did they come as children, or have they come across the border at some point as adults?
Well, certainly large numbers of them came as children, and they came as adults too. But some of them, they estimate about 40% that are here came and just overstayed a legal visa.
I see. And why – this may seem like a ridiculous question, but what are they doing here? Why Kansas City? Jessica, what's happening in Kansas City?
Well, great. I mean, I'm a native-born Kansas Cityan and love Kansas City, and they are choosing Kansas City for the same reason that all the rest of us have. I mean, we've actually seen an exodus even from the urban core to our suburban neighborhoods. Johnson County's seen a huge spike in families moving there, and I get this question a lot, but it's the same reason that you moved there. There's good schools, plentiful jobs. You know, that's really what all families are looking for.
So you mentioned that there's sort of an exodus to the suburbs. I mean, what for folks who live in Kansas City, what part of town are we talking about? We're talking about all parts of town. Is that right, Carlos?
That's correct. And Jessica makes a good point with Johnson County. Within a year to 2 years, there will be more Hispanics in Johnson County than Wyandotte. Hmm. And at the rate it's growing, it will surpass even Jackson County. So, for the same reasons, you know. People get successful in their businesses and their careers, and they move to the suburbs.
Demographers have noted that the traditional immigration patterns have changed a lot from the turn of the century, where you saw most immigrants on the coasts and in the big cities. Now you see them spread throughout the United States. And in fact, you know, we'll see little towns in like Monett, Missouri, or Marshall that have huge immigrants. Populations, and it could be because of some industry that's there and that they've gathered around, or something like that. So it's much more of a throughout the United States issue than it maybe was in the past.
Are there ways that the situation plays itself out uniquely in the Kansas City area? Are there particular aspects of the immigration debate that seem to especially affect folks in Kansas City? Carlos?
Yeah. What's interesting about Kansas City is, you know, Kansas has a Dream Act and is one of nine states that has a Dream Act, but you walk across the street and Missouri does not. And you see how that affects our youth, and not just Hispanic youth. This is, immigration is not a Hispanic issue. It's from all over. We have people from all over in Kansas City that have overstayed their visas, perhaps, or have come to this country and are undocumented. But when you see a student who can't go to college, the policy is detrimental.
Roger, tell us what a Dream Act is. When we say Kansas has a Dream Act, that's a reference to the federal legislation that was proposed but never approved by Congress, that would have granted a particular path to citizenship for a group of immigrants who are undocumented. Tell us what that would be.
Yeah, that's right. Congress has considered it a few times and voted it down. It became an issue in the last presidential election as well. It basically recognizes that children that were brought here haven't done anything active on their part to violate U.S. laws and should be given special consideration. And so there is currently a policy by the administration. It's not the Dream Act, but we call it deferred action, that was instituted last year, that has allowed people who came before the age of 16 and are under 31 as of a certain date to apply for a legal permit to be here and have work authorization. But it doesn't lead to citizenship or a green card. It's just a temporary measure to keep them from being removed. But anyway, basically the Dream Act is a recognition that people brought as children shouldn't be penalized for being here.
And the action that the Obama administration took last year through executive orders will not necessarily outlast the current administration. It is a temporary measure.
That's right. And in fact, during the presidential election, the Romney campaign would not commit to continuing that when asked that question.
Which may well have been a factor in the outcome of the election. Jessica, what does it mean that Kansas has a Dream Act? What is the legislation in Kansas that is favorable to immigrants?
Yes, it has to do with the cost of education in Kansas. It's kind of poorly named because it's targeting the same students, but it allows students to qualify for in-state tuition regardless of immigration status, just based on qualifications such as going to a Kansas high school and completing some other qualifications. But that makes the higher education more attainable for these students. They still are not eligible for any federal aid, so these students are working incredibly hard to pay for that in-state tuition out of pocket.
And but what's been the barrier to Missouri adopting a similar program, Carlos?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the answer for that. Kansas has been a lot more progressive when it comes to immigration legislation. So hopefully we will be in Jeff City this year, and like we always are, as well as Topeka, and hopefully we see some progress.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellis, and we're talking today about the immigration debate and about how it affects Kansas City in particular. What are the local implications of this controversial nationwide issue? We especially want to hear from you today if this conversation affects you personally. Have you at some point crossed a border or come from another country to live here in Kansas City? Is your business or your neighborhood especially affected? We are having some trouble with our phones this morning, so you might be able to get through at 816-235-2888. But you can also join the conversation on Facebook. KCUR's Facebook page is available. You can even send us a message through Twitter. We're at KCURCST. That's Central Standard's Twitter handle. You can also email us, of course, at centralstandard@kcur.org. I think a lot of our listeners might be surprised to know that at least when it comes to the availability of education funding, Kansas would be on the more progressive side, given what folks often hear about Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach and his policy recommendations with regard to immigration. How does that come to be, Roger?
Well, I'm not sure how it comes to be. We're thankful for that. But I just wanted to point out that the constitutionality of that law has been challenged by Chris Kobach and his supporters, and it's been upheld. I think California had a similar law, and it was also challenged and upheld as being constitutional as well.
I guess I feel like we should also ask, although our guests today from the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and the Latino Coalition of Kansas City, not all of the immigrants in Kansas City are Latino or Hispanic, right?
Yeah, certainly not. In fact, my firm represents a lot of Latino, Hispanic people, but I personally do more business immigration, represent some of the major corporations, and I'd say the largest group of immigrants that I deal with are from India and China.
So we'll talk a little bit more about some of the business aspects of this conversation in just a moment. But I want to bring into the conversation Rob Sagastumi. He is a graduate of William Chrisman High School. He's now a student at Kansas State University, and he's from Honduras. And he's joining us this morning. Rob, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you, William.
You are one of those who would have benefited from the DREAM Act. Tell us what that means.
Absolutely. So, today, the attorney have said the DREAM Act did not pass back in 2010. We fought for it. I'm actually part of the Kansas-Missouri DREAM Alliance. We are a organization here locally with undocumented students led. So we are basically working towards, you know, the DREAM Act or other immigration bills that may come across here in Kansas. Luckily, we have received the deferred action. But like they said, that's just temporarily. We're working now currently on a bill that is going to be presented on the Kansas side where they're trying to repeal the institution for undocumented students.
How did you find yourself in the United States as an undocumented immigrant?
I came here when I was 12 years old. My mother brought me with a visa. We all came with a visa. Like Jessica, I'm from a mixed data family, meaning that I'm the only one who is undocumented. Currently, because of a deferred action, I have a current status, but that's just going to last for 2 years. After that 2 years, I'm not sure where that stands, but I came here with a visa. My mother made the petition for me, but I aged out from the petition, and now I came here, or I became undocumented.
So before the petition was approved, you turned 18, and so it was no longer.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
She could no longer petition for you at that point.
Correct.
So if you wanted to become a citizen legally at this point, what would you have to do?
The only two options right now that I would have is to go back to my country, home country, with a bar of 3 to 10 years, which I don't plan to do because when I was 10 years old, I was raped, and the person who raped me is still alive. So I don't plan to do that at any point. And the other option that I have is to marry a USA citizen, but that's also a block for me because I'm gay as well. So DOMA does not allow me to do anything like that.
And so other than sort of a pretend marriage, which of course some have suggested, you've said that's not something you're open to doing.
No.
And so with President Obama's executive order, with the deferral of action, you've sort of been given some time. But why is that not enough?
It's not enough because we keep seeing families being torn apart. There are thousands and thousands of children who are left without their parents currently right now. You know, we have like five parents that are in jail, and we're trying to like fight for them to be able to stay here. And also, you know, we are seeing still legislators putting all these bills trying to oppress our community. And that's one of the reasons why it's not enough. It's just a Band-Aid. Deferred action did not, you know, doesn't approach to a large community here. So that's one of the reasons why our organization keeps fighting for a more reform bill that it's going to, like, allow more than just DREAM Acts or DREAMers, like we call us, ourselves.
Let me ask my other guests here today. How typical is Rob's story? Is this pretty much how this goes?
Jessica? Well, no. I've had the privilege of working with the DREAM Alliance over the years, and these students are so inspirational. Rob's a good friend of mine, and it's just why you keep sort of banging your head against the wall with immigration policies. We have not seen this deferred action is the first good news in over 10 years in immigration law. You know, I'm also by day an immigration attorney, and I see every day families, you know, where I have to tell, they come in saying, where do we sign up? Pretty much, you know, American citizens that come in with their spouse, and they, you know, and I have to explain to them that it's a long, hard process. Another executive order that the president has done that's about to come online will alleviate some of that uncertainty. My own family faced the 10-year bar that Rob referenced, that where my husband had to leave and go back to Mexico and was stuck there for 11 months while we decided if he had to wait 10 years to return to our family. I mean, I don't think most people don't understand that even marriage to a U.S. citizen is not a direct path to legal status.
We had someone who wrote to us by email, asked us not to use his name. If President Obama's immigration reform happens, it will not only help Mexican immigrants, but many other sections of society and nationalities. I am a gay person who is unable to lawfully wed my partner of over 10 years in order to stay in the country. As a result, we live in fear of discovery and have very limited options in terms of employment and travel. Am I right in recalling that among the president's proposals is for immigration reform is a particular effort to include the partners of gay and lesbian people? Is that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. It was not in the bipartisan framework from the Senate, from the eight senators, that, but it was mentioned in the president's framework.
Let's talk about the president's framework for a moment, and also that bipartisan framework. Among the proposals, it proposes that the borders be secured, and maybe we can talk for a minute about what exactly that means. Creating a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, as we've been discussing, talks about implementing a national system for allowing employers to check whether workers are here legally. It talks about encouraging more high-skill immigration, and it talks about creating flexible limits on overall legal immigration that rise and fall depending on the health of the job market. Are all of these proposals that have been around for a while, is this a groundbreaking effort, or is this something that that really is sort of overdue, has been talked about a long time, and is just now finally coming into to the national conversation?
Well, it's certainly overdue. You know, those principles, a lot of those were reflected in the 2007 Kennedy-McCain bill that was proposed. But in some ways, this is probably even a little bit more progressive than what was happening then. But yeah, those are good aspirations to have. Of course, the devil will be in the details.
Right, right. Why the concern with securing the borders? That's something that is almost the first thing that every one of these proposals that comes out has. Is that a legitimate concern? Do folks in your organization, Carlos, or yours, Jessica, think that's an important priority, Carlos?
You know, we need to secure our borders. You know, I think if you talk to most people, we need to know who's here, and we need to make sure that both borders are secured and not just one. But when it comes down to it, this issue is this country is based on immigrants, and we're an aging society, and we are going to need a younger workforce to pay our Social Security, to pay to increase our tax base, to fill the jobs. And so, you know, really nothing has changed but a lot of the laws. So what we need to do, this is long overdue. President Ronald Reagan gave amnesty in his second term to 3 million undocumented. I think what happened in the last 20 years is we sort of ignored the problem. And now we need to the topics you discussed about are all good questions that we need to look at how do we find a solution for workforce.
Roger.
Well, certainly we haven't ignored securing the borders in the last few years. In fact, there were benchmarks in the 2007 legislation about securing the borders, and we've already met or exceeded all of those. In fact, President Obama was being known as the deportation president up until the last these last actions on the deferred action. They've deported over 400,000 people last year, and that's the most we've ever had in our history deported in 1 year. And in fact, I wanted to add that some 40,000 in the first 6 months of last year that were deported were parents of U.S. citizens, and these are non-criminal aliens being deported. So there's been a tremendous amount of human misery through our securing the borders, and I think we're certainly much further along, if that's our goal, than we were 5 years ago. The key on this framework is going to be how they define what it means to secure the borders, because they've set up a commission of Southern governors and officials there to declare when it's secure. And I don't know what that's going to mean, because if it's Jan Brewer, for example,
the governor of Arizona,
yeah, she may say that the border's not secured until there's no one illegally crossing. And
right. So your concern is that if that sort of decision about whether the border is secure is outsourced to a commission, it will never, in fact, be declared secure.
Well, I just think they'll have to have some standard that's more than whether I feel it's secure or not. If your standard is nobody crosses illegally, that's like saying we won't declare Kansas City to be a safe place to live and work unless there's no crime.
Sure. Yeah. Jessica?
Well, and at this point, we are down to, I think, negative immigration at this point, but between the economy and the border security measures that have
right.
been enacted.
More are leaving than coming in.
That's correct. Right. And then I think the important part is to take all the pieces together because, for example, I mean, I don't know the specifics about Rob's situation, but if he is the adult child of a permanent resident, you know, the current wait, is several years to reunite with your family. And so people, you know, if we could fix that problem and create channels where folks could actually immigrate legally, they would pick that path over the coming across the border without authorization,
which is the stated goal of the proposed legislation. We had a call from Grover in Midtown, which we aren't able to get on the air, but Grover said Rob can join the military and would be able to gain citizenship, and it would also pay for college, one avenue to explore. I don't know if that's something that Rob is interested in, but is that even true? Could you become a citizen by joining the military, Roger?
Not right now, but if the DREAM Act were passed, that's one of the options for being on a path to citizenship.
All right. Well, we won't press Rob to enlist just quite at this moment.
No, I think you have to be a permanent resident or citizen to join the military right now.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that correction. Let's take one call from Steve, who joins us. Steve, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, good morning. Now, I wanted to – you asked how it's affected – someone to call in if it's affected them. Well, I just want to tell you, and I'm just being perfectly honest. I know you're going to say I'm racist and whatever, because this has happened to me. Now, three times in my life, I've about got killed by Mexicans. The last time was about a year and a half ago. They pulled in my driveway in the middle of the day. I have a home in the northeast area, and they were loading up on about $12,000 worth of ladders and scaffolding. And so I called 911, the line's busy, called East Patrol, the line was busy. So I had no choice but to go out with a gun. Went out there with a gun, come straight at me with a gun, and they just kept walking at me wherever I pointed the gun and held the hand out. They wouldn't get down on the ground. Two of them started circling me.
Okay,
so I backed down the driveway, and then they tried to run me down with their truck. I was nice enough not to shoot them, so I shot the tires out. Two blocks over, they lived, and the police went over there, and they found two other people there, two illegal immigrants from Mexico. Never caught them. And what am I supposed to think when we talk about when stuff like this happens to me? Because it hasn't happened to any other ethnic group.
Okay, so thank you for your call, Steve. So Steve has been the victim, he says, of crime by what he believes to be Mexican immigrants. The concerns about crime are certainly widespread, right, Carlos? How do you respond to that?
Well, of course, anyone who's a criminal, if they're undocumented, we don't want here. So we would agree on that. But the studies show that where immigrants populate, crime is actually lower. The crime statistics, even in Arizona, when Governor Brewer was saying that they're the most dangerous cities, according to the Department of Justice, those are the lowest crime rate cities in the nation were the border cities, which are populated by immigrants with a good percent undocumented. So if someone's creating a crime, of course we want them in prison and deported. But the majority statistics show the majority of undocumented are God-fearing, hardworking people that are just trying to make ends meet and wanting a better life for themselves and their family.
Roger?
Yeah, I think I'd say that this proposed legislation would help the situation you're talking about, because it does not provide a path to legalization for criminal aliens, but it would require other people who want to be on the path to citizenship to register, and there'd be background checks. And so one of the arguments is that when you have the honest people coming forward and registering and getting authorization to work, law enforcement can focus more on the criminal element that's here. And then, of course, if we secure, if there's more focus on the borders too, that if people can get in legally, then their focus will be on the criminal element that's trying to cross the borders.
That's Roger McCrumman. He's an attorney at McCrumman Immigration Law Group. We're also talking today with Jessica Piedra of the Latino Coalition of Kansas City and Carlos Gomez of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, as well as with Rob Sagastume, a student here in Kansas City, also involved in these issues. We're going to continue our conversation with them when we come back. We'll talk especially about the business impact of immigration in the Kansas City area and the potential impact of the proposed legislation that we're hearing about. We also want to hear from you. Email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or go to KCUR's Facebook page and post your comments there. I'm Brian Ellison. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about immigration and Kansas City with leaders of local Latino community as well as attorneys who work on these issues. We're also joined by Rob Sagastume, who is a student in the area, grew up here since the age of 12. Rob, I'm curious, when you listen to this conversation, which is about the immigration issue and the immigration debate, for you this isn't just an issue. This is your life. What's the impact of that on you personally?
Absolutely. Like you have mentioned, you know, this is my life. This is what I breathe. This is what I dream about. When I graduated from high school, you know, I had all these dreams and goals for my life. I wanted to become an attorney, but that has kind of shifted ever since that I come to the understanding of what undocumented meant for me. You know, it completely shifted my life. You know, from having to search and really, really like work hard for getting scholarships to be able to apply, you know, because like you had mentioned, in Missouri, we're completely banned to go to a public institution. Currently, right now, I'm at the Johnson County Community College getting my liberal arts degree, and I'm planning to transfer to Pitt State University to get my bachelor's in social worker. So it has, you know, made an impact personally in my life because, you know, everyone in my family is documented, but the fear of getting stopped by a cop or the fear of put into the deportation proceedings, you know, I'm the only who has to go through that in my family. And it's really, really scary to just to think about that I would have to go back to a country, you know, where a person who attacked me or abused me when I was 10 years old is still there, and I don't want to face that again.
I wonder, have you ever thought about hiding, moving to a new place where you wouldn't be found?
No, absolutely not. I think the more local or vocal that I am about this issue, you know, the more powerful it is. There's a lot of misunderstandings out there. So that's one of the main reasons, you know, I come out as an undocumented and also queer guy. I'm not afraid, you know, and I'm not ashamed of who I am. I actually have to, like, talk about these issues because we have to put a face to these struggles and to know, you know, that we're humans and we're just trying to, you know, work here. We're trying to give back to the community. And this is not a Latino issue like they had mentioned. You know, there's hundreds of other ethnic groups that are here and they're just trying to give back to the community.
After you get your degree, what do you want to do and where do you want to live?
Absolutely. I want to stay here locally in Kansas City. One of the reasons why I'm pursuing social worker is because I do want to be able to work with kids who have been sexually, physically, or mentally abused. I did not have that growing up when I was a kid, and I want to be able to help those kids, you know, and kind of like give back to the community by, you know, helping the kids, because when I was growing up, I was extremely scared. I did not know where to go to or who to talk to about these issues. So that's one of the reasons why I'm pursuing a social worker career.
816-235-2888 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation about how you are personally affected by immigration policy and by immigration issues in the Kansas City area. Jessica Piedra, you're president of the Latino Coalition of Kansas City. Rob has spoken a little bit about some of the unique issues that he deals with as a person in this situation. He also mentions particularly the LGBT community as sort of a group within the group of undocumented folks. Are there other groups that face particular challenges that you work with?
Well, really, I don't know that it's a particular problem. I mean, the fear that he described, I mean, affects all families that have an undocumented member. I mean, worrying about if your father's going to be pulled over and put in deportation proceedings every morning as he drives to work, you know, if your family's going to be separated, you know, by that 10-year bar, or you have an avenue, but it's blocked, you know, by our current mismatch of laws and regulations, is just, I think, difficult in a unique way for every family. I think it is the most difficult on the young people that were brought here, though, as children, because they, you know, I think as Rob sort of explained, don't even realize that they're undocumented often until they become 16 or 17 years old, and it's time to get a driver's license and think about college, and you have to see all your friends moving on with their life, and you realize that you're stuck. And so I think that's probably the most difficult subgroup of immigrants.
I think one of the things that seems to result in that getting stuck is an economic reality, and the issues of employment and business as it relates to being an undocumented immigrant. Carlos, what is the economic outlook, the financial outlook for an undocumented would-be worker in the Kansas City area?
Well, if we follow the lead of some of the anti-immigration legislation that we just saw pass last year in Alabama and Georgia, and what that did to those states' GMPs, especially in the agricultural industry, not having good immigration policy is going to affect American business. It's going to affect from the local mom-and-pop store to the dry cleaners. So it does affect Kansas City. But, Brian, I'd like to go back to what Rob said about putting a face. And I was very fortunate to be invited to the Statue of Liberty Foundation Awards a couple years ago, and where they honor people whose parents came through Ellis Island or grandparents. And when I was there, they honored Lee Iacocca, the son of immigrants, whose father was a janitor and mother was a seamstress, no education. They honored Joe Torre of the Yankees, whose mother was an immigrant from Sicily, came to this country with an older aunt who was only 18. They honored Senator George Mitchell, the son of immigrants, whose adopted parents were Lebanese and Syrian. And each story was so powerful that these were children of immigrants, and look what they contributed to this country. So when I see Rob over here, I'm very excited. And I hope that we don't stop what he can give, because there's so much talent sitting right next to us. And he has so much to offer, and let's help him help us.
Well, you know, we're speaking of the ways that people help, the ways they get involved in business and economics. We had a question actually specifically for you, Carlos, from Andres on Facebook. He quotes Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He says that he's confident, the senator is confident that given a fair chance, I can convince most Americans, including Americans of Hispanic descent, that limited government, that free enterprise is better for them and better for their upward mobility than big government is. The question Andres asks is, can you speak to the values that Latino immigrants bring to starting new businesses? Do they need convincing that free enterprise works for them?
You know what? Business comes natural to the Latino community. In fact, we are 10% more likely to open up a small business. And as we know, small business is the number one employer of Americans. When they polled teenagers, Hispanic teenagers, they are 10% more likely to say they want to be an entrepreneur. So, all across Kansas City, both documented American and undocumented, you see businesses popping up in Jackson County, Wyandotte, Johnson County, Clay County, and they're employing people, paying property taxes, buying their buildings, renting, and it's bringing commerce to Kansas City.
How would changes in immigration policy affect that?
Well, you would have a lot of people now who can come out of the shadows And they are paying taxes. This is the biggest misconception, is that undocumented are not paying taxes, and they are. But it's going to allow people to really come out of the shadows and expand their businesses, because there are limitations on business loans. You cannot get a business loan. So someone undocumented, it's all coming. It's cash. It's a cash-based society. You cannot get a business loan if you're undocumented.
Forgive the basic nature of this question, but how are undocumented workers paying taxes? How is that happening?
Well, sure. First of all, it's estimated that $7 to $10 billion a year is put into Social Security by duplicate Social Security numbers.
Okay.
And so, a percent of that is going to be error in typing by companies or by the government, but that's going to be a small percent. So if someone is using someone else's identity, they are paying into a tax base of which they cannot collect or get back.
Or employers are using those other identities to cover the fact that they are hiring undocumented workers.
Perhaps they may or may not know that it's not their identity. So I don't want to say that employers are knowingly, because a lot of them don't know.
Right. Okay. And Roger, that was Carlos Gomez, I should mention, from the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Roger McCrumman, you work with business and immigration law. What's been your experience observing this part of the immigration debate?
Well, just to continue on what Carlos was saying, I think that's right. Employers don't typically may not know whether somebody's documented or not. They present documents. They get on the payroll. They pay payroll taxes. They pay Social Security. And that's what he's referring to. I see much more of that than I see of somebody getting paid under the table or something like that on a cash basis.
I guess I'm surprised. Obviously, these workers are a significant part of the economic sector, perhaps even an engine for future economic growth. Why do our business leaders not more proactive in seeking the immigration reform that we've been talking about? A lot of the opposition has come from some of the same part of the political spectrum that might ordinarily be representative of big business. Is that right?
I don't know if I'd say that's the case or not. Traditionally, business has been supportive of freer immigration policies.
Carlos?
In Kansas, you see a coalition of 37 organizations: the Kansas Livestock Association, the Landscape Association, the Beef Association, because it affects their entire industry in a negative manner. And we saw some really progressive proposals from the Secretary of Agriculture of the state of Kansas last year to give working permits, the state of Kansas to give working permits in the dairy industry, ag industry, and meat packing plant industry. And although they did not pass, it's getting more and more support each year.
Jessica?
Great. Yes, I was actually going to reference that's been our main ally in fighting some of the business has been some of our main ally in fighting some of the anti-immigrant legislation on the state level. And then as well, our panel is actually being hosted by the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce tomorrow, where we're continuing this discussion. So they're in favor of some form of immigration reform.
Roger.
Some of the groups I work with are more concerned about the lack of available talent, immigrant talent on the high end. Mm. So people, highly skilled workers, they can't seem to get enough. In fact, I was at a presentation by one of a local Fortune 500 company here recently, and they said they simply cannot get enough H-1B workers. This is for special.
H-1B is skilled.
Yeah, labor. Specialty workers, requires at least a bachelor's degree in a specialty area. And in fact, there's a quota on how many can be granted each year, and that quota is 65,000. I can remember a few years ago when it was 195,000. So before the recession hit, we routinely ran out of H-1Bs even within the first week of their availability. And this year, as the economy is recovering, some of the local major employers are concerned that they're going to run out again. And so we're preparing in our office to file lots of H-1Bs on April 1st, which is the first day they can become available. And they may run out that first week. Last year, they ran out in June after filing on April 1st, which meant that somebody who called, a business who called, say, in August last year, who wanted to hire a professional, would not have the opportunity to do that until a full year later. October of this year. And so this is a real concern. A few years ago, Bill Gates spoke to Congress and said, if they don't increase the number of H-1Bs, he's going to locate the next Microsoft plant outside the U.S. And in fact, they did in Canada.
And so you represent the businesses going before the government asking for an extension or a larger number of these permits to be granted.
Right, as well as the individuals. But, we work with a lot of the businesses that are hiring professional foreign labor.
What are the particular trades? What are the particular kinds of skilled labor that you see, especially here in the Kansas and Missouri area?
Well, we do a lot for engineers, and certainly there's a shortage of that. Software engineers and all kinds of engineers, architects, IT professions. Those are the typical ones you see. And in fact, this representative from this company said that there's an estimate that within the next 10 years, only about a third of the IT positions that will be needed to run our economy will be produced by U.S. universities. And so there's obviously going to be a huge need for additional professionals. And they're working with colleges to try to get more programs, more people interested in that. But these companies are faced with the dilemma of either bringing in professional workers or outsourcing to and this company already has a plan in India with professionals working there because they can't get enough of the professional workers they need here through our present policies.
Carlos, is that what you're hearing as well?
Definitely. And I want to point why it makes good business sense to have a diverse staff. And business is international now. And so when we have so much growth opportunity throughout Latin America, throughout in China, who better to do business than American companies? And so it makes sense for American companies to have a workforce from different parts of the world that have those relationships, that have those connections, that understand the business culture, and that can help bridge that gap for more business opportunity for American firms.
Listening to Central Standard on KCUR. If you have questions or comments about the impact of business, about immigration policy on business, call us at 816-235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We had an email from Cesar on email. He says, my business is directly affected because of the shortage of professional commercial drivers, or so-called CDL, commercial driver's license drivers. Large percentage of CDL drivers are about to be retired, and they have not been replaced. Drivers employed by local corporations, they have large pool replacement drivers of Mexican, Salvadoran, and Russian descent. How can we expect some of these proposals currently on the table to address this shortage? Any experts on the driver shortage around the table today? Roger?
This is an occupation that would not qualify for an H-1B. And there's just virtually no good options for it. Now, there is a proposal for a kind of guest worker type program in the Senate framework, and it would allow, if you could demonstrate a shortage, it would allow them to bring in people like that. Right now, the only legislation that allows that is only for seasonal jobs,
mm-hmm.
so like roofers and landscapers. And even that's so burdensome that it's not many employers do it, but there simply isn't a visa to bring in somebody right now as a commercial driver.
I'm curious. I have to admit, I'm surprised. I think a lot of people associate immigrants with agricultural jobs, maybe especially here in Kansas and Missouri. We might think about that, but I don't hear you talking about those as the jobs that are most at issue with this kind of legislation.
Well, there is mention of those kind of jobs in the Senate framework. What would have been and what we called an Ag Jobs Act that would allow agricultural workers to come. And there is legislation now that permits it, but I think they estimate only about 1% of the ag workers in the U.S. actually come through that kind of legislation because it's so burdensome.
Jessica?
Well, and I was just saying the general path to citizenship would provide, there would be 11 million new workers that would be eligible to get the certification that they would need to be a CDL driver, be able to get the driver's license and take the additional testing if they were able to come out of the shadows and be able to be work authorized. So in that way, that shortage could be addressed.
Roger?
I can tell you one of the real problems in this is the backlogs in the visa numbers. And this is on the employment side as well as the family side. So, for example, a few years ago, I had a major railway company call me and say they had an engineer for a train, a conductor for a train. And that's not a job that could get an H-1B because it doesn't necessarily require a degree. And they said, how can we bring him over? And I said, well, there's not a good non-immigrant visa. And they said, well, what about getting him a green card? And I said, well, we can test the labor market and go through those steps, but then he has to wait for a number to be available. It could be 10 years or more. So effectively, there's no policy that allows somebody to come and work in that capacity. And it's a skilled profession, but there's not really a visa for it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if all of you might comment a little bit on how you think the tone of this conversation has changed, maybe in the last 5 years, maybe even in the last year. Is this a different conversation now about immigration policy than we've been having over the last few years? Rob, what do you think?
I definitely think that the tone has changed. You know, it seems that it's going towards the right pathway. It seems more progressive. But as we're talking and we're talking about, you know, trying to help the undocumented community and all that, I'm also seeing, you know, more action as far as like curating programs that attack the undocumented community, putting families apart. You know, like one of the attorneys mentioned here, President Obama has deported thousands and thousands of families that are, you know, that have no criminal record or anything like that. And yes, we are talking about, you know, a more progressive or a more reform immigration policy and law. But at the end of the day, the actions that I'm seeing, you know, are not reflecting that. I'm seeing families being torn apart for every day.
We have a call from Andy, getting back to a topic we were on just a moment ago, talking about the skilled workers, the so-called H-1B workers. Andy, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I've been in the IT industry for a long time now, my entire working life pretty much, and I'm kind of tired of this claim there's not enough skilled IT workers with bachelor's degrees in the U.S. What I see happening is companies using that excuse to pay less money for those skilled IT workers. They'll bring in a U.S. worker, and he gets more pay than the guy from India. So the idea that there's not enough coming out of the U.S., it's just ridiculous in my book.
Are you speaking from experience, Andy?
I am. When the first H-1B visas came in right around 98, 99, my particular specialty, the salaries went down about 30%, and there were U.S. citizens begging for work while all the guys were coming in from out of the country.
All right. Andy, thanks for the call. Does Andy have a point? Is H-1B worker typically paid less than American to do the American citizen to do the same job?
Well, there may be examples of, like Andy's, anecdotally that you can find, but the H-1B program does require the U.S. employer to pay a wage that's not less than they'd pay the average U.S. worker for that position. In fact, we submit wage requests to the Department of Labor, and they determine what they call the prevailing wage is for that kind of position, and it's part of the program. They're required to that's because that's a concern the government has had, that they would be paying foreign workers less wages than they'd pay U.S. workers doing the same work. So the program's designed to prevent that, but, you know, you may find some examples where that hasn't been the case, but it's certainly something we pay a lot of attention to.
A moment ago I asked about how the tone of this conversation has changed over the last 5 years, even the last year. Have you seen it change, Jessica Piedra?
I think so. I mean, in that we are actually finally getting to the substantive positions where we might actually get reform, where before it was just more name calling, really, and things like that, but where we never actually got to talking about it. I think, like Roger, I'm waiting, and advocating for certain details that I want to see in that reform to make sure that it actually does help our community, and it's not just get something done, but let's do it the right way.
Yeah. How about you, Carlos?
We're definitely seeing a shift. A poll came out last week that 62% of Americans now are in favor of comprehensive immigration reform. And I think that's due to a lot of things. Part that people start to really, when you look at the issue and you start asking tough questions, the only answer is let's sit down and find a solution. And then when you meet people, like we met Rob here, and I've known Rob and everyone here has, and you put a face to the situation, then that really changes people's perspective that these folks are human beings that are just living, wanting to live the American dream. And I will say one last thing. This last election woke up a lot of people that the Latino voter expects immigration reform.
Yeah, Roger.
Yeah, consider that just a couple of years ago, we couldn't even pass the DREAM Act in Congress. I mean, it was voted on. We couldn't pass it. It had broad support throughout the American public. And now, and the best we were hoping for was maybe some piecemeal legislation, DREAM Act, Ag Jobs or something. Now we're talking about a comprehensive framework, which I think shows a pretty dramatic shift.
Well, we'll see what happens in the Senate and in the House and with the president's signature as this debate unfolds in Washington. We'll continue to see the impact it has here in Missouri and Kansas as well. Our guests have been Carlos Gomez, who's president of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Jessica Piedra, president of the Latino Coalition of Kansas City, Roger McCrumman, lawyer at McCrumman International Law Group, and Rob Segastume, a student and activist here in the Kansas City area. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find our Central Standard archives, podcasts, and a lot more at kcur.org. Be sure you tune in tomorrow as we have Central Standard Fridays. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Claire McInerney. The announcer is Kim Noble. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. The U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria will be here. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard.